What direction are the Canucks going in? Do you know?
I think it's the direction the Edmonton Oilers have been in, Jason. They don't use the word rebuild here because ownership has promised the fans. They intend to make the playoffs every year. That's their goal. That's their objective. And they believe, you know, at the ticket prices and, you know, all that, that they ought to strive to make the playoffs each and every year. But I think it is quite clear from what is going on now with this roster and what happened in free agency and the draft, that the Vancouver Canucks are, in fact, in the early stages of a rebuild here. And frankly, I think Jim Benning might have done more surgery to this team already if it wasn't for the no-trade clauses and some of the expensive contracts that have been difficult, if not impossible, to unload. It's funny because my on-air co-host, my partner, Blake Price, was such a fan of what Peter Chiarelli did over the weekend, and beyond just Connor McDavid, but getting Griffin Reinhart and subsequently Cam Talbot, that he said to me the other day, he said, we ought to ask on one of our poll questions whether or not the Oilers are now better than the Canucks. And we asked that today, and 70% of our respondents said they believed, as it stands right here today on July 2nd, the Edmonton Oilers are better than the Vancouver Canucks for the first time in a decade.
Wow. Canuck fans are a little frustrated. Or who knows? Was it Oilers fans voting on that one?
Yeah. I'd have to go into our to see the demographics, how many of those votes came from Alberta. But no, the fans are really down on the management team and the club right now. And, I mean, Eddie Lack was a very, very popular player here. Yeah, backup goaltender, but, you know, twice in the last couple of years has had to assume the starting job either via the trade of Roberto Luongo or Ryan Miller's injury this past year. Very, very popular player. Kempe Ekstra was a 10-year Vancouver Canuck, you know, said during the late days of the John Tortorella era a couple years ago, hey, if this ship is going down, I'm going down with it, sort of thing. That's my loyalty. And Zach Kassian, despite the fact he didn't reach his immense potential, was also a fan favorite because, you know, he was a big, big guy who had good hands and, you know, sort of looked like a hockey player with the teeth and the hair and, you know, had a little bit of intimidation to him and all that. And, of course, people here always rue the trade of Cam Neely, the power forward, and, of course, celebrated the Todd Bertuzzi years as the game's best power forward. So those were three quite unpopular trades that Jim Benning has made here over the last week, and that has a lot of people here upset with the club. And let's face it, I mean, in every single one of those deals, well, two of the three, they didn't get a roster player back. They got a draft pick. Someone's going to help them down the road. So in that regard, I think it's hard to argue that they're better at this stage. I mean, maybe the defense is going to get a little bit better because some of the young guys take another step forward. But, yeah, I mean, up front, you look at it, it's still a pretty aging core of forwards. And I don't see that changing too much between now and training camp.
Matt, you talked about there'd probably be a lot more change if it wasn't for the no trades and no movements. Would you venture a projection on who might move if those weren't in place? Because right now the deals that are being made are nibbling around the edges, and you're not getting in what you're putting out when the returns are Brandon Prust and Bartkowski. Taylor Fadun's a terrific kid who's a great story to even be in the National Hockey League.
Yeah, and we had him on our show today, Robin.
Yeah.
And boy, I got a lot of time and respect for that young man who joined us actually from Edmonton. Look, I don't think they're at the, I don't think they're right across the trade the Sedins bridge. Mm. I do think they would trade Alex Burrows if he didn't have a no-trade clause. Part of me that thinks they would trade Yannick Hansen if he didn't have a limited no-trade clause.
Right.
I think they've waited too late on Chris Higgins to get anything of value from him because he's got a couple years left at $2.5 million. There's a part of me that wonders whether they would have already moved on Dan Hamhuis, but Dan Hamhuis came here to his home province and turned down less money to do so. And just, I think that's an absolute flat no. If they ask Hamhuis to waive his no trade, maybe at the trade deadline, but certainly not right now. So that would be the collection. I still think they want to keep Edler. I still think they see some upside there. And there have been times here in the last, he had a nice bounce back season after being dreadful a couple of years ago. But yeah, here that's the thing, Rob, is they do not have primary assets that are going to net them even, you know, not even, certainly not Dougie Hamilton returns, but not even Phil Kessel returns.
Matt Sakaris joins us. Phil Kessel, man, wow, what a terrible trade for Toronto, in my humble opinion.
I didn't mind it, Jason. You get the cap space, you get a terrible apple out of your room. It was dragging down your franchise, and it was antagonistic with your fans. You know, for me, Kapanen might turn out. Who knows? I'm not sure Arrington's more than a third pair, but you get a first-round pick next year, which should be a pretty good draft if they miss the playoffs, and you get to reallocate that money to someone other than Phil Kessel, who I don't think is going to age very well on a diet of hot dogs as he gets closer to 30, 33 years old or whenever his contract expires, because, what, 7 more years at $7 million? So I was okay with that one just because, you know, when you have that sort of attitude in the room, I'm not sure, even if they are scoring 30 goals, I'm not sure they're helping you all that much.
Well, I can see that opinion as far as, you know, wanting to trade Phil Kessel. But to me, the return, you know, Pittsburgh's making the playoffs next year. I don't see any doubt how they won't make the playoffs next season. And then, you know, you're talking an 18 to 30 pick, give or take. And it's, you know, 4 years down the road. I think Toronto screwed themselves by making it so publicly obvious they wanted to trade one of the league's best point producers over the last 5 years, that they hurt themselves by trying so hard to tell all of their fans, Phil's the problem, when in fact, to me, their leadership's the problem. They just should have kept it quiet. You know, let the media guys speculate on stuff and say, no, we love Phil, because you might have been able to get something for him. By telling everybody you don't want him, basically you're screwing yourself over. It's almost like Phil should have just asked for a trade.
Yeah, I don't disagree that they diminished the asset, but I think Kessel did that on his own accord as well with what effectively was a half-season quit last year, let's face it. I mean, he was just dreadful in the second half of the season. And didn't look like he wanted to put in the effort on a night-to-night basis. I'll do you one further, Jason. I think they screwed themselves by acquiring Phil Kessel at a cost of Tyler Seguin and Dougie Hamilton in the first place. I mean, to me, that was one of the trades that, you know, has set this Leafs franchise back to the point of where it is now, and I suspect they will probably be one of the worst teams in the National Hockey League next year.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. The thing was, when they made that trade in September before the season started, I think management, to me, it's how bad is your management when you acquire Phil Kessel, he scores your 30 goals, and you still finish 29th. Like, the rest of their team was terrible.
Yeah. Oh, no. That was a fatally flawed team. No doubt about that. I mean, even if they get the best out of Phil Kessel, I'm not sure they even make the playoffs. So, yeah, agreed there. But look, the bigger point, Toronto, Vancouver, the two big English-speaking markets, I'm not sure the hockey in either town is going to be a lot to write home about over the next couple of years.
Yeah, I think you're probably right on that one, Matt. Look, cast a glance our way, Edmonton. You touched on that earlier. You know, I think Chiarelli's made some improvements. He's clearly not sitting on his hands and waiting. In your estimation, what's his best move aside from stepping to the podium and saying Connor McDavid?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'll tell you what. Like, on the surface, I thought the price they paid for Griffin Reinhart was a little high, given that he's a defense-only defenseman. It doesn't give you much on the offensive side of the puck. It certainly doesn't project to. And isn't, you know, yet an established NHLer. But I think given the circumstance there, given that was a glaring need to get, you know, that concrete block defenseman who was just going to keep others at bay, I thought that was just what the doctor ordered for them. And same thing with Calvert. I thought, again, maybe it was a little too much to pay for a goaltender who isn't an established number one. I mean, I think I would have rather had Eddie Lack for a third-round pick than what it cost to get Cam Talbot. But You added a player at another position of absolute glaring need. So in that regard, I think Peter Chiarelli did a very nice job of addressing two of the biggest needs on the club. And look, he has the good fortune of drafting Connor McDavid, and now you look at their center ice position, and you know what wins games in the NHL: your goaltenders and your center icemen. If you can get good goaltending from Cam Talbot next year, and you know, even if he isn't an instant superstar and takes a year to grow into star player status, I think you're going to be a lot better down the middle. So, yeah, I mean, we've been saying it for a number of years, but I do think the future in Edmonton is bright, and I look forward to seeing how Peter Chiarelli manipulates this next season, this next trade deadline, and next summer, because I think what he proved in Boston is he's a very shrewd guy and has a Stanley Cup championship. And I wouldn't be surprised down the road if he gets one in Edmonton as well.
Matt, one last one for you. I was intrigued by Zach Kassian's comments after the trade when he stated, I think, I could have given more and they knew that. Man, that's kind of a damning statement about yourself, yeah. Right? What did you make of that statement? Was there more? You know, I know it's just one quote and maybe there was a whole lot I was missing, but was I missing something on that one?
Yeah. Well, I'm not so sure what Zach was referring to okay. in that regard. What I can tell you is this. They wanted Zach Kassian to play a physical power forwards game. Zach wasn't exactly enthusiastic about that. Now, he does suffer from a bad back. It flared up a couple of times this year, and he had to miss injury. And so we all believe that the fact that a guy 6'3", 220 pounds, with his wheels, which are pretty good, doesn't play physically, has more to do with the fact that he's worried about sustaining some sort of major back injury or even another flare-up that keeps him out of the lineup, because when he was out of the lineup, it was sometimes hard to get back in. His detail without the puck is not very good. That's not going to get you the benefit of the doubt with most coaches in the National Hockey League, and his offense would come and go. The other thing about Kassian is that the off-ice habits are not good. He has not yet dedicated himself to being a professional in every asset of his life to make himself the best hockey player possible, and I think the Vancouver Canucks grew weary of that, on top of the fact that he maybe was more of a skilled winger in a power forward's body. And so when he says, I could have given more, well, I think there were times when there was effort was an issue from Zach Kassian, where he sulked when he got into a coach's doghouse, or sulked when he was, you know, getting 8 minutes on the fourth line as opposed to playing with the Twins or in the top six. And I think with the benefit of hindsight and maturity, he will realize all that. It sounds like some of it is already kicking in.
Matty, great to talk to you. I know the BC Lions will debut this weekend. Matt, the BC Lions fans must be cringing when you see four quarterbacks get knocked out in week one. You sure hope that Lule's not the next one.
Yeah, bad weekend for the CFL in that regard. And Travis Lule goes back to Ottawa, where this was the site of where he re-injured the shoulder last year. So he said today, you know, it's going to be a good mental test for me to have to go back into that stadium and face the demons of, can I get hit again? And if I land on my throwing shoulder, is it going to be all right? We shall see. But I think the over-under, put it this way, I'd be very surprised if Travis Lule starts 18 games this year.
Matty, always great to talk to you, man. It was good seeing you at the draft.
Yeah, ditto, Jason. Be good, fellas. We'll talk soon.